After traveling for hours, Rosanna pointed to a structure in the gathering shadows.
There's a house.
Thank God. I hope they have some coffee. Yeah.
Andrew, wait!
Wait? Wait for what?
I don't think there's anyone there.
Well, we aren't going to stand around on niceties, Rosanna. We're going in, whether there's anyone home or not. Come on.
As they got closer to the house, more and more details began to be revealed, such as a barn with no door, a corral with no horses, and a fence with no gate. There was only a remnant of a garden, and a couple of windows of the house were broken out.
It doesn't look like we're going to have to worry about being invited in. I don't think anyone lives here.
I don't think so either.
They rode on into the front yard, or what had once been the front yard.
Hello, the house! Hello, the house!
Andrew, let's keep going.
Why?
I don't know. Something about this house frightens me. What's so funny?
We were taken off a train in the middle of the night. We have killers after us, and you're afraid of an empty house?
Yes, you're right.
Andrew dismounted.
What are you doing?
I'm going to go inside and have a look around.
Rosanna dismounted as well.
All right. If you're going in, I am too.
The two went inside. As they had expected, the house was totally deserted, with not one piece of furniture.
So much for my cup of coffee.
An old newspaper was lying on the floor, and Andrew picked it up.
Look at this. It says raids along the Kansas-Missouri border are continuing.
What raids?
It's talking about the Civil War. This paper is dated April 1862.
Oh, my. This house has been empty a very long time.
Get down! Are you all right?
Yes.
You crawl over into the corner, away from the windows.
What are you going to do?
I'm going to shoot back. Damn it.
Outside in the yard, the albino cursed himself for missing. With the failing light, it wasn't that easy of a shot. He should have taken a little more time, aimed a little more carefully.
You two, come out of there!
The answering pistol shot didn't come anywhere close.
I reckon not all you McAllisters can shoot. If you folks don't come out of there right now, I'm gonna burn you out. You can see how dry the wood is. That old house would go up like a prairie fire.
Can he burn us out?
Not if we stop him.
How are we going to stop him?
By killing him. I should have done that when I had the chance.
Do you think you can shoot him from here?
Andrew held up the pistol and looked at it.
No, not with this. Not unless we do something drastic.
Like what?
Did you hear what I said? If you don't come out of there now, I'm gonna burn you out.
I've got an idea.
Outside it was still light, but the sun had already dipped below the western horizon. If the albino didn't do something fast, they could sneak away in the night. He started studying the best way to move up to the house and set fire to it. Then, as he was contemplating the best route of approach, Andrew came running out of the front door.
Andrew, no! Don't leave me!
I'm getting out of here! You're on your own!
Andrew ran toward the horses that were tied out front. He held the pistol out and fired a couple of ineffective rounds toward the albino.
Andrew, you coward!
Well, reckon a coward like you needs killing.
Ah! Andrew, no! No!
Rosanna came running out of the house and knelt on the ground beside Andrew.
Oh! You killed him! You killed him! Oh!
The albino grabbed the rifle by the barrel and held it across his shoulder as he sauntered leisurely to where the woman was crying over her brother.
Why are you crying over him, Missy? It looked to me like he was running out on you.
The albino came within about 5 feet of the weeping woman and the prostrate man.
I'd say he got what was good for him.
No, you don't understand. He was a fine, sensitive man. We should have never come to this savage place.
Yeah, well, you did. Now, what do you say me and you go back in the house and have us a little fun?
Fun? You think I could be with you after what you just did to my brother? How can you kill a man in cold blood like that?
Rosanna rose to her feet and stepped away from Andrew.
Your brother was no man. He was a worm.
Suddenly, Andrew rolled over, pistol in hand.
The smallest worm will turn, being trodden upon. Shakespeare, King Henry IV, Act 5, Scene 6.
The bullet had hit the albino in the gut.
You shot me!
And just when you thought you had it all going your way.
Is he dead?
As Andrew looked at the albino's face, a strange thing happened. The eyes, which were pink, gradually deepened in color until they were a very bright blood red. Andrew felt his pulse and found none.
He's dead.
Good. I never thought I would feel joy over the death of another human being, but I must confess that... Andrew!
What?
Someone is coming!
Quick, back into the house!
The two of them scurried back inside. It was quite dark inside the house now, and Andrew knew that he could stand in the window without being seen, while there was still enough light to keep an eye on the approaching rider. Andrew watched as the rider came closer, then he called out.
That's far enough, mister!
What's the matter, Andrew? Don't you recognize your own brother?
Falcon! Rosanna, it's Falcon!
Andrew and Rosanna ran outside just as Falcon rode up to the front of the house and dismounted. Rosanna rushed into his arms to embrace and kiss him. Andrew shook his hand. After the greeting, Falcon looked down at the albino's body.
You did this?
Andrew did.
We both did it. Rosanna did a superb job of acting.
Acting? Never mind, I'm not even gonna ask.
How did you find us?
I tracked you to the weigh station. Saw a broken chair and some loose rope there. Then saw the three horses came this way and three went the other, so I figured out what happened.
How did you know which horse to follow?
Because they're pretty.
Pretty?
Falcon looked over at the two horses Andrew and Rosanna had ridden. One was a mare, and Falcon lifted the mare's left forefoot.
This is pretty. She has a tie bar shoe. She was stolen a few days ago. Belongs to a girl I spoke to. And of course, there was this.
Falcon held up a little piece of cloth that Rosanna had torn from her dress and tied to the branch of the willow tree.
I told you he would find it, Andrew.
You were right.
Falcon, you wouldn't have any water, would you? We haven't had a drop to drink since we escaped.
Falcon took his canteen down and handed it over. Both Rosanna and Andrew drank deeply.
I'm afraid we drank all of it.
Well, that's all right. We'll get some more at the hotel.
The hotel? What hotel?
The hotel and gym. It's not too far from here. We'll spend the night there.
You mean a real hotel? With beds and sheets and a bath?
Well, it's nothing like the Bixby Hotel up in New York, but I'm reasonably sure it'll beat this place.
What will we do with the albino?
If you're asking me, I say we leave the son of a bitch here.
Falcon, we can't just leave him here.
Why not?
I just wouldn't feel right about it.
Believe me, it won't bother him any.
I wouldn't feel right about it either.
All right, if it'll make you feel any better. When we get into town, we'll pay the mortician to come and get him.
Won't we have to see the sheriff and explain why we killed him? What is it?
There is no sheriff in Jim. There's no law of any kind except from the county seat in Colby.
Won't we need to explain this to him?
Not much of an explanation needed. The story about you two getting taken off the train ran in every paper in the West. Hell, probably in just about every paper in the U.S. and Europe.
You really think so?
I'm sure of it.
Damn. Can you imagine what that will do for our box office?
Andrew, you are incorrigible.
The town of Jim was little more than a small cluster of buildings rising from the prairie in front of them. Night had fallen by the time they arrived, but it was not so late that the town itself was dark. Nearly every house had light, ranging from the dim golden gleam of candles in the smaller houses to the brighter glow of lanterns in the more substantial homes, as well as a cafe and saloon. There was a post sticking up in the middle of the crossroads, right in the center of the town. The sign identified the two main roads of Jim as Lincoln and Pine.
Where is this hotel you were talking about?
I imagine that's it.
Falcon pointed to a ramshackle building that was somewhat larger than the others. The porch roof protruded from the front of the building, and on the roof was a sign that had clearly been broken in half, probably by a strong gust of wind. The sign read, Ho.
You're right. It isn't the Bixby.
Well, we could have stayed back at the deserted house.
Oh, no. This'll do just fine.
The first thing they did after securing a room at the hotel was go to Aunt Emma's cafe.
May we have a menu, please?
Oh, we don't have a menu, ma'am.
What do you have?
We have ham, eggs, and potatoes. Oh, and biscuits.
I believe I will have ham, eggs, and potatoes, and biscuits.
Yes, ma'am. And you gentlemen?
That sounds good to me.
Falcon just nodded, and the waiter left to fill their orders.
What do we do tomorrow?
First thing tomorrow, I'll take you two back to the railroad where you can catch the train and finish your trip to New York.
Then you're going back to McAllister Valley?
Not right away.
What do you mean, not right away? What else do you have to do?
I just need to take care of a little business, that's all.
I want to help.
No.
Help? Help what? What's going on here?
When Falcon says he's going to take care of a little business, he's talking about the men who pulled us from the train. Right, little brother?
Yeah.
Whatever beef you have with them, mine is larger.
Andrew, these men are killers. You aren't cut out for anything like this. I couldn't live with myself if anything happened to either of you.
Falcon, I'm Jamie Ian's son, same as you. And I'm going to take part in this with you or despite you.
There was an edge of resoluteness in his brother's voice that reminded Falcon of his father. And despite himself, he smiled. He stuck his hand over and put it on Andrew's shoulder.
All right, brother. I'll be proud to have you by my side.
After supper, Falcon found the town mortician, identified himself, then paid to have the albino's body retrieved. That taken care of, he returned to the hotel, knocked on the doors of both Andrew and Rosanna to make certain they were all right, then he went to his own room. Lying in bed, watching moon patterns on the wall of his room, Falcon had a feeling that tomorrow everything would be coming to a head. He would rather Andrew not be with him, but he could understand Andrew's need to participate. He just hoped that Andrew lived through it.
Lord, if there's anything to the idea that those who've gone on can look down on us and take care of us, I want you to let Pa take particular care of Andrew.
It wasn't until the next morning that a wagon left Jim to bring the albino's body back. The sign painted on the side of the wagon read, Ebenezer Posey, Mortuary Services. It was an ordinary farm wagon pulled by a team of mules, and it was what Ebenezer used when he called for a recently deceased in the home. It wasn't until afterward, after the embalming and dressing him in their funeral clothes and putting him in a coffin, that he would use a glass-sided, highly polished black hearse. The hearse was pulled by a pair of matching black horses, and Ebenezer would dress in cutaway jacket, striped pants, ruffled shirt, tie, and high hat to drive it. He only used the hearse if there was an actual funeral, and from what he knew of these remains, there'd be no funeral, just a burial in a poorly marked grave. But from the moment Falcon McAllister approached him about retrieving the body, Ebenezer was more than willing to do it. He had read about the incident of the two famous actors being taken from the train. He also knew who Falcon McAllister was, and by burying one of the men responsible for such a heinous crime, he felt as if he were reaching out to touch history. And of course it didn't hurt that Falcon had paid him quite generously to see to the body. He knew exactly where the body was. It was at the old Doomy house, which was about 8 miles west by southwest of Jim. It had been 20 years since anyone had lived in the Doomy place. In fact, one of Ebenezer's first jobs had been to remove Mrs. Ella Doomy from that very house when she died. She was the last occupant. As Ebenezer drove his wagon out to the house, he tried to think of some way he could use this job to his advantage. It was interesting to be a part of history, but he wondered if there wasn't also some way he could maybe profit from it. Maybe he could put the body on display and charge a nickel apiece to anyone who wanted to see it. Of course, some would think that was wrong. but it wasn't like a regular viewing. He was sure that the deceased, whoever he was, would have no family or friends coming to see him. The only people who'd be interested would be the morbidly curious, and Ebenezer saw nothing wrong with charging them a small fee. He saw the old house as soon as he came over the hill, and he saw buzzards circling about. He hoped they hadn't torn too much flesh away from the face. It would make it harder for him to prepare the body for a viewing. As he got a little closer, he picked up a shotgun. Ebenezer didn't hit any of them, but then again, he wasn't aiming at them. All he wanted to do was scare them away, and that he did. Ebenezer pulled into the yard, set the brake on the wagon, then climbed down to have a look at the body.
God in heaven!
The albino's face was as white as chalk, and his eyes, which were wide open, were as red as cherries. Ebenezer had seen the pallor of death hundreds of times during his career, but he had never seen anything like what he was looking at now. The sight was so bizarre that it made him shiver.
Who's going to pay to look at something like this?
Then, almost as soon as he asked the question, he had second thoughts.
Then again, this is one of the outlaws who took the McAllisters from the train. And he even looks like a vampire. Yes. Well, Mr. Michaels, as frightening as you look, I'll just bet folks will come from all around to see you. Why, you could turn into a gold mine.
Ebenezer lowered the tailgate of the wagon and started examining the body to figure out the best way to get him into the wagon. With rigor mortis setting in, it might be easier not to try and lift him, but just grab him by one of his arms and pull him into the wagon. Luke, Loomis, Zeth, Strayhorn, and Logan crested a little hill and the farmhouse came into view.
Ah, there's something down there. Told you they would be at the old Doomy house.
That ain't them, Luke.
What do you mean it ain't them, Loomis? There don't nobody live at the Doomy house anymore, so that has to be them.
Where'd they get the wagon?
Yeah, that's right. They didn't have no wagon.
Well, it's somebody.
Yeah, but who?
When we get down there, don't nobody do no talking but me.
Ebenezer had just gotten the body into the back of the wagon and the tarp pulled over it when he saw the five riders coming toward him. He was so engrossed in his work, they had managed to get close without him noticing them.
Good morning. Who might you be?
Good morning. Ebenezer Posey is my name. And who are you fellas?
My name's Jones. See, your sign says you're a mortician.
Yes, sir, I am.
Yeah. You have a body in that wagon?
Indeed I do, sir, and you may have heard of him.
Really? Who is it? What's his name?
Oh, well, I don't actually know his name. What I mean when I say you may have heard of him is that he was one of the outlaws who took those famous actors off the train a few days ago. Perhaps you read about it?
Yes. Yes, we did.
Well, sir, justice has been done, at least in the case of this one man, because the McAllisters are free, and this man, one of their captors, is dead.
Is that right? You think we could take a look at him?
Ebenezer had planned to charge a nickel apiece for people to view the body, and this would be a chance to try it out. On the other hand, there were five of them, and he was alone and a long way from town. Deciding that discretion was the better part of valor, Ebenezer nodded.
I suppose you can.
Oh, shit! It's the albino!
Ebenezer squinted in curiosity.
Do you know this man, sir?
No! It's just that the man is an albino. I guess my friend has never seen one before.
Yes. Yes, death does drain one of color. But I must say that in this case, the result has been quite dramatic. Perhaps he was an albino.
How do you know this is one of the men who took the McAllisters?
Oh, the McAllisters themselves told me. They and their brother came into town last night. Mr. Falcon McAllister himself made the arrangements. Oh, I didn't come out until this morning because I was certain the deceased wouldn't be going anywhere during the night.
You said town. What town would that be?
Oh,
It's Jem. It's about 7 or 8 miles in that direction. You can't miss it. It's the only town for miles around. Most folks figured the railroad would come through the town, so it built up real quick. Of course, the railroad didn't come through. Now we practically have more buildings than we have people. I reckon having all the McAllisters come to town at the same time is about the most exciting thing that ever happened to Jem.
Are they still there?
Oh, yes, sir. They sure are. I think they plan to hang around for a few days until Miss McAllister is somewhat recovered from her ordeal.
I see. Tell me, is there a saloon in town?
Indeed there is. It's called the Farmer's Dell, and it's quite good.
Well, boys, it's been a long, hot ride. What do you say we ride into town, have ourselves a few beers?
Have a few beers? Is that all we're going to do, is just have a few beers? Or what about...
A sharp glance from Loomis cut Logan off. Loomis touched the brim of his hat by way of goodbye to Posey, then led the others in the direction of town.
I wonder what happened to the albino.
He got himself killed.
Yeah, we could all see that. But the question is, who done it?
What do you mean, who done it? Falcon McAllister done it.
Could be that one of them actors done it. If I'd had a chance to talk to the Undertaker a little longer, I would have asked him who done it.
You talk too much already. It's a wonder you didn't give us up when you said that was the albino.
Sorry, Loomis. I guess I just wasn't thinking.
What are we going to do when we get to town?
We're going to kill the McAllisters, take the money, and leave, Seth.
Just like that?
Just like that. You heard what that old coot said about Jim. He said the town's about dried up. Is that right, Luke? You're from here. What's Jim like?
Like Posey said, tain't much to town.
Sounds like it's our kind of town. As a matter of fact, after we get rid of the McAllisters, we may just take it over. Always wanted me a town.
When Loomis and the others reached the edge of town, they stopped. There was not one single soul to be seen.
What is this? Is this a ghost town?
No. Look at the building, Strayhorn. They all have glass. Some of them's fresh painted. This ain't no ghost town.
Then where is everybody?
How the hell do I know?
I don't like it. It's giving me the willies.
Everything gives you the willies.
Loomis, look.
Logan pointed to the front of a hardware store. There were 6 coffins standing up in front of the store. 3 of them were closed, and on the front of the closed coffins were 3 signs. Drew Tate, Kelly Tate, the albino. There were signs on the empty coffins as well. These signs read, Loomis Tate, Matt Logan, Ken Strayhorn.
What's going on here?
They don't have no coffins for Seth and Luke. They must not know about them.
Shut up!
There's the saloon. I need a drink.
Get the horses off the street first.
Where?
Loomis pointed toward a gap between the apothecary and a feed store.
Take them back there.
5 men rode into the alley to the back of the apothecary, where they quickly dismounted and tied their horses. Afterward, they emerged back onto the street.
Now why'd we put our horses back here?
Think about it. There ain't another horse in sight. We leave ours tied up out here, they'll stick out like a sore thumb. I don't know what's going on here, but I think we should play it careful.
What about the saloon? Can we go into the saloon?
Yeah, if it's open, then someone's bound to be in there, even if it's just the bartender.
The 5 men walked across the street to the saloon. Strayhorn pushed open the batwing doors and looked around. The saloon was empty.
There's nobody in here.
What do you mean there's nobody there? It's got to be somebody in there. Where's the bartender?
Logan, Seth, and Luke came in as well, and they stood there for a moment looking around the empty saloon.
Look.
Logan pointed to a table. There were 4 hands of cards lying on the table, and a stack of chips in the middle of the table, as well as stacks in front of each hand.
They left their money!
Strayhorn took his hat off and went over to the table.
What are you doing?
I'm taking this money!
That ain't real money, that's just poker chips. They ain't worth a nickel outside this saloon.
Oh yeah, I reckon you're right.
Hey, Loomis. What do you make of that?
There, sitting on the bar, were 2 bottles of whiskey. There was a sign leaning against the whiskey bottles.
Drink up, boys. They're on me. Falcon McAllister. Well, that's nice of him.
That wasn't very smart. He probably poisoned it.
What?
Strayhorn staggered back against the bar and stood there for a second with his hands clasped over his stomach.
What about it, Strayhorn? Is it poison?
Nah, it ain't poison.
Strayhorn reached for the bottle again, but Logan beat him to it this time.
Well, you had your drink.
Shit!
What's so damn funny, Luke?
You just killed the clock.
I'll kill you if you don't shut up.
I was just funning with you, Loomis. I didn't mean nothing by it.
The second bottle was open, and the men passed it back and forth.
I don't like this. I don't like this at all.
Hell, have a drink, Loomis. It's easy enough to figure out what's happened.
Is that right? What do you think's happened?
McAllister heard we was coming, and him and his brother and sister skedaddled out of town, that's all. They're afraid of us.
Uh-huh. Where's the rest of the town?
Falcon, Andrew, and Rosanna were in Falcon's hotel room. They had chosen it because it was at the front of the hotel and had a commanding view of both Lincoln and Pine Streets. It also had a view of the Farmer's Dell Saloon.
You sure everyone's in the church?
Yes, everyone except Posey, the undertaker, and I've got somebody out on the road to meet him to keep him from coming into town till it's all over.
Good. This is our fight, not the town's fight. This way no one will get hurt.
Where are they now, Rosanna?
Rosanna was looking through the window.
They're still in the saloon.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
How about you, Andrew?
I'm ready.
Then let's do it.
Nodding, Rosanna stepped out onto the porch roof. She walked to the edge of the porch, then shielded her eyes with her hands, looking toward the end of Lincoln Street. Strayhorn was standing by the door of the saloon.
Loomis, come here, look at this.
What?
It's the McAllister woman.
Loomis hurried quickly to the door.
I don't see anyone coming.
I don't see them. I look that way.
Son of a bitch! They're in the hotel waiting for us. They didn't see us come in.
Well, if they're counting on her to give them warning, they got another thing coming.
Strayhorn, no, you'll give us away.
You got a plan?
Yeah.
What is it?
Follow me.
Guns drawn, the five men left through the back door of the saloon, ran up the alley to the far end of the street, then dashed across the street and came down the alley until they were behind the hotel. The back door of the hotel was unlocked.
You know which room they're in?
It has to be the upstairs front room. She was talking to someone in there.
The five men went up the stairs as quietly as they could, the silence facilitated by the carpet. When they reached the front room, the door was closed. Strayhorn reached for it, but Loomis waved him away. Strayhorn looked at Loomis with a questioning expression on his face. Loomis cocked his pistol and aimed it at the door, then indicated that the other should do the same.
Now!
Do you think we got him?
Reload!
With pistols at the ready, Loomis opened the door and they rushed into the room. Inside the room, they saw evidence of the barrage they had just released. The window was shot out. The mirror was broken. There were holes in the dressers, in the walls, and in the bed. But there were no McAllisters.
Where the hell did they go?
Loomis stepped up to the window and looked out over the town. He was about to look away when he saw something that he hadn't seen before. There was something hanging from the signpost in the middle of town, the post that announced the intersection of Lincoln and Pine Streets.
I'll be damned.
What? What is it?
Loomis pointed.
The money. The son of a bitch has hung those saddlebags with the money from that signpost down there.
Maybe he's saying this is the end of it. Maybe he's leaving us some money, hoping we'll go away.
Maybe, but I doubt it.
I doubt it, too. There's probably no money in them. That's probably just the empty saddlebags.
No, I'm not sure what he's trying to do, but I believe the money is in them saddlebags.
Why you think that?
Because that's just the kind of thing that crazy son of a bitch would do.
So what do we do now?
We go get the money.
Falcon and Andrew were standing just under the overhang of the blacksmith shop, looking down the street toward the saddlebags.
There are five of them. I thought there were only three. Were those other two with him when they were holding you and Rosanna prisoner?
No. This is the first I've seen of them.
They must have signed on some help. Andrew, it's not too late for you to leave.
Andrew picked up a pair of blacksmith tongs.
If you say that again, little brother, I'm gonna go right upside your head.
Now hold your tongue.
Ouch. You could have come up with a better pun than that.
I'm not worried, though.
You aren't?
No. I mean, here you are, standing right by my side,
same way you stood by Wyatt Earp's side in Tombstone.
Oh, all right. I deserve that.
Loomis crept to the signpost and stuck his hand down into one of the saddlebags. He pulled out a fistful of money.
Yes, I told you. I told you the son of a bitch would leave the money in the saddlebag.
The others came running up to the signpost then, and for a moment there was a feeding frenzy. They started pulling bound packets of money from the saddlebag and sticking them in their pockets.
Remember, half of it's mine.
Hell it is. It's every man for himself now.
Well now, what do you think, Andrew? Ain't they like a bunch of flies buzzing around a pile of horse turds?
You're insulting the flies, little brother.
It's McAllister!
Falcon took Loomis out. Luke missed Andrew, but Andrew didn't miss Luke. The man went down and Andrew turned his attention toward Logan. Logan went down. As Logan was going down, Falcon dropped Seth. And then turned his attention to Strayhorn. Strayhorn staggered back from being hit and tried to raise his pistol to fire. Falcon and Andrew stood there looking down at the five bodies. Smoke curled up from the ends of their pistols to join with the larger cloud of gun smoke that was floating out over the town. It was over. From the far end of the street, the doors to the church opened, and the townspeople started running up the street toward them. Andrew stood holding a smoking pistol, looking down at the man he had just bested.
Now he'll eat his supper in hell.
Rosanna clutched her hands to her heart.
Oh, sir, you have saved the town. You have bested the evil killer of men and despoiler of women.
It was nothing.
Nothing? Why, sir, you are too modest. What you did required courage and great skill.
My adversary also had courage and skill. But what made the difference in this contest was the triumph of good over evil.
Yes, and thus it will always be. Good over evil.
Yeah! The curtains opened again, and Andrew held out his hand to welcome the other players on the stage. The other players came out in ones and twos until finally all were standing on the stage. Then, taking his sister's hand, Andrew and Rosanna stepped to the front with one final bow before exiting backstage. As they left the stage to go back to their dressing room, they were met by a reporter for the New York Times.
Mr. McAllister, I have heard that this play is taken from real life, that it is a factual representation of your own exploits during your recent trip to the West. Is that true?
Andrew looked over at Rosanna, then looked back at the reporter.
No, sir. It's just a play. A drama for the stage, and nothing more.
Crusade of Eagles is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2006, William W. Johnstone. Production copyright 2007, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. With performances by David Coyne, Richard Rowan, Terrence Aselford, Nanette Savard, Ken Jackson, Christopher Graybill, Karen Carbone, Jeff Baker, Tim Carlin, Michael Replogle, Kate Torrey, James Konacek, Thomas Penny, Sonny Lasky, Michael Glenn, James Lewis, Dylan Lynch, and Mort Shelby. Additional red shirts performed by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Bob Supan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Johann Detweiler. Book adapted for graphic audio by Casey Jones. Additional original music by Johann Detweiler. If you enjoyed Crusade of Eagles, read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com. And be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's Blood Bond series, available from Graphic Audio at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net.
The following previews are of Graphic Audio productions, rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
From the creators that brought you the critically acclaimed Eagles series comes a whole new kind of Western. Far from the civilized lands of the East lies a harsh and brutal territory, surrounded by towering mountains and battered by howling winds. There is no law. There are no rules. The land is governed by the way of the gun. Blood is the only currency, and all debts are paid in full. In this land, there is a legend.
Some people say he's always been here. They say he's as old as the mountains. They say he's a ghost.
Running from a past he can't escape, killing in order to live, his legend grows. No one knows his face, but they all know his name.
Who are you?
They call me Preacher.
The High Lonesome is his land. He rides alone, fighting for the innocent. The wicked be damned. He is the ghost of the wilds. He is the first mountain man. He is Preacher.
What are you gonna do now?
I'm gonna find him, and I'm gonna kill every damn one of them.
If you can't find that hot graphic audio title you're looking for, just head to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD or MP3 disc format. Or, the fastest and cheapest way, download that puppy and play it on any of the many devices that'll play Windows Media. And if you're on the road or just a total computer feeb, snatch up the phone and call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net.